This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen. The poet T.S. Eliot wrote, "April is the cruelest month, but cruel doesn't begin to describe what happened to the residents of Grand Forks, North Dakota, and East Grand Forks, Minnesota, 10 years ago this week. The Red River of the North crested at more than 54 feet, and 50,000 people were evacuated. Before Katrina, it was the largest displacement of an American city." Mike Jacobs is the editor and publisher of the Grand Forks Herald newspaper and a frequent guest on our program. In the days leading up to the big flood, he joined his neighbors on the sandbag line.
We were all in denial. I remember my own epiphany occurred on the first Friday in April when I was sandbagging and a lawyer that I know was in front of me in the line. He was handing bags to me. And it started to rain, and then the rain turned to sleet, and then the sleet turned to ice. And he looked at me and said,
We're bleeped.
We're bleeped. And I thought, you know, he's probably right. We're probably not going to win this one.
Pat Owens was the mayor back then and was the first female mayor in the state of North Dakota. She'd been in office less than a year when the flood hit.
So I went down there, and as I was going down there, I could see the water coming out, flowing out of the manholes. It was everywhere. I mean, it was surreal. And when I got down there, our director of public works and city attorney looked at me and said, "We need to evacuate the city, and you are the only one, according to the city code, that can do that." I just thought, oh, my goodness, you know, if I evacuate this city and nothing happens, they're going to impeach me. But if I don't, we're going to lose lives.
You can feel the heat coming from the fire here. Firefighters are trying right below us to hook up a fire hose.
The water rose above the ground floor of the businesses downtown, but the disaster didn't end there. A fire broke out in the historic security building. The flames quickly spread and ultimately damaged or destroyed 11 buildings in the heart of the city. Bruce Hoger was one of the firefighters on the scene. What was going through your mind when you were seeing this?
My God, this is happening in my hometown. There were chunks of plywood from the building going up in the air in the heat column from this fire, 200-400 feet up. And these were like 2x2 chunks of plywood, and they'd come down falling, burning still. That was quite a bit of the spread right there.
That moment, it just hit me like a fist in the stomach, and I thought, oh my goodness, you know.
Pat Owens.
I mean, it was so unreal, and you had so many things tugging at you from every direction. I mean, you didn't even have time to think about one thing. You had to just keep going, 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 you know. And all I could say is just we need to save all the people.
Miraculously, no lives were lost to the fire or the flood. But lives changed, and during the long recovery process, times were hard for everyone, including Mike Jacobs, who needed help to clean up.
We were miserable. We came out of the basement. It was raining a little bit, and there was a bell ringing. It was the Red Cross truck, and it stopped by the house, and we walked over, and a woman from New Jersey, who had never been west of Pittsburgh, gave us a cup of coffee, and I looked at her, and I looked into the eyes of God. You know, it was just such a compassionate thing for this total stranger. She and hundreds, thousands of others came out of a sense that here's a community in trouble and I can help.
Help came from all corners of the country and the highest levels of government. President Bill Clinton stood beside Mayor Owens in a visit to the Grand Forks Air Force Base.
Just his being there touched me so much to know that, you know, he cared enough to come to our small little city and tell us that he would stay by us, our side, all through it.
I saw something your mayor said the other day that struck me in particular. She said, "What makes a community a place to live in is not the buildings, it's the people, the spirit and faith that are in those people. Water cannot wash that away, and fire cannot burn that away, and a blizzard cannot freeze that away. And if you don't give it away, it will bring you back better than ever. And we'll be there with you every step of the way." Thank you, and God bless you.
I'm Rosemary Warden.
My name is Sherry Schindler, and it's good to see Rosemary.
since she was my neighbor at FEMAville.
FEMAville was the temporary neighborhood of FEMA trailers provided to the displaced residents. Both Rosemary and Sherry now have new homes. Sherry's is a modest house on South 20th Street, where the two reunited to share memories of 10 years ago.
She had this lovely family, little stair steps, and there were five then. Is
yes.
that correct? And I got to play with them sometimes. We made cookies a couple of times. Her children and I, because I missed mine and I was alone.
And how many children did you have in the trailer?
Five.
You had five children?
Yeah.
How big was the trailer?
Didn't you have three bedrooms in yours?
Yes.
They were quite nice, actually, and we were so grateful to have them.
How long did you live in the trailer?
About 9 months.
Was the trailer park, the FEMA trailer park, a neighborhood, kind of an ad hoc one, but did it feel like a neighborhood to you?
I think so. You had something in common. My kids played with other kids they met and got on their bikes, you know, a couple of gravel roads in between the trailers.
Is there a memory that sticks in your mind about your time there?
I remember a lot of nice things that happened, and mostly it was outpouring from others all over the community and other states. And I remember, and you probably do too, when the truck came around and delivered boxes to people living in the FEMA trailers, and they were full of Christmas ornaments, lights, and most everyone with flooded basement lost Christmas supplies. But they didn't lose the Christmas spirit, and here it was coming to FEMAville.
Rosemary, after Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, you went down south to help, right?
Yes. I went to Jefferson, Texas. I thought I would be making soup and sandwiches to load onto a Red Cross truck or something like that, but I didn't end up doing that. I was very qualified in that area. But I ended up in front of a computer. But it was a wonderful feeling to be able to help someone who is going through some of the things that you've experienced.
Michael Brown is the current mayor of Grand Forks. Last fall, the city adopted Biloxi, Mississippi.
FEMA called us the poster child of flood recovery. We got $500 million in flood recovery effort and aid, and the outpouring in the United States and the world was just dramatic. So we felt a need to give back. I think it's important to utilize the experience from those people who went through those disasters, like our fire chief, police chief, and public works directors. All these people have a wealth of information. So we went to Biloxi and said, this is what we have learned. So we shared with them, and you also share the optimism, you will be back, and you will be strong. You'll never be whole, because there's part of your community's long-term debt and suffering. But overall, psychologically, I think, and fiscally, I think your community can be stronger than it was before.
Whitey's Cafe in East Grand Forks, Minnesota, is just across the Red River from Grand Forks, North Dakota. Every week, a pickup Irish band plays pipes and drums, and the music is fueled with pints of Guinness. This Art Deco cafe opened in 1925. The flood of 1997 destroyed it. Today, it is completely rebuilt. Many of the original fixtures are still there, including the unique stainless steel horseshoe bar. The mayor of East Grand Forks, Lynn Staus, sat down to talk to us in one of the booths.
And I always used to tell people, well, I can tell you simply how the difference between Grand Forks and East Grand Forks. GF, Grand Forks, they got flooded. EGF, East Grand Forks, everyone got flooded. We were so fortunate, though, back then. There were no disasters. There was no war going on at that time. The sympathy of people, the feeling of people out there was very much for us. I remember going on national television. The one question was asked, is there anything that you might need in your community? And I said, well, you need everything when you lose everything. But I said, I can think of just a little thing like the kids that lost their teddy bears, how comforting that would be to have a teddy bear. And within a couple of days, box after box load of teddy bears were arriving. We had so many teddy bears, we started giving them out to hospitals in the neighboring communities. So that just shows you how the American people are so good at giving and helping.
Business is now booming in downtown East Grand Forks, and Applebee's restaurant and the Blue Moose Bar are next door to the new Whitey's. Across the street, Cabela's, the outdoor outfitter, is attracting visitors from the Midwest and Canada. In addition to the can-do spirit of the people, the secret to the current success of both communities is money. Hundreds of millions of dollars from public and private sources. The late McDonald's heiress, Joan Kroc, donated $2,000 to each head of household in the greater Grand Forks area. Perhaps the greatest success story today is the new flood protection system. Although last year's crest of the Red River was the fifth highest on record, the city survived without a single sandbag. The character of Grand Forks has changed from what Herald editor Jacob says was a laid-back, funky college river town to something glitzier.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Can I get your first and last name?
Since the flood, Grand Forks has attracted high-tech businesses. The Amazon.com call center employs 200 people. Behind them in the industrial park, the Danish company LM Glass Fiber employs 750 workers to make enormous turbine blades for wind farms. And some of the longtime mom-and-pop stores remain. Widman's Candy Store is a Grand Forks institution known as the home of the Chipper, a chocolate-covered potato chip.
Is that how much this box is, a half a pound?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
Do you like eggs? Vanilla? Marshmallow? Cherry? Coconut?
Marshmallow.
Let's try River Song. River Song. Eric,
this week, a series of events is scheduled to mark the 10th anniversary of the flood. James Lee Witt, the former head of FEMA, will be the grand marshal in a parade. There will be speeches and dedications and ceremonies, but the most anticipated event is a revival of a musical first performed in 1997 called Keep the Faith. It was an original production, directed and created by Brad Sherwood, his sister Connie, Michael Weber, and the Summer Performing Arts Company. It told the story of the flood through such songs as Sump Pump Blues, River Dance, and Sandbag Stomp. Brad Sherwood was rehearsing the songs with the chorus from Red River High School this past week. When the flood hit 10 years ago, Nick Nelson, Cozy Hygert McGurn, Laura Harmon, Maureen McCullough, and Jay Spieler were in elementary school. They still have vivid memories.
Baby pictures floating in the water and birth certificates, vacations,
everything. Her mom turned on the news and there was downtown burning, and it was my dance studio was one of the first things we saw. Pretty traumatic as a second grader to suddenly.
I live in the same house, even though we still haven't finished the basement yet, and it's still kind of
like just leave. And we went to the Air Force Base for a couple of days, and then I was actually sent off to Minneapolis, so I didn't see my parents for 2 months. But I remember crying a lot. I was with relatives.
And I remember I was at my aunt's house, and my mom said we had to go back to our house and take stuff out of our basement. And when we got there, I took a McDonald's toy, and I threw it into the basement, and I heard it splash. And
In 1997, Pat Owens became known as the flood mayor, but she was not reelected. She now lives in Florida, but will return this week to mark the anniversary.
It'll always be my home. My parents are passed away and are buried there. I really wished I would have had a term as mayor to do the things I had set out to do. But I left it with sadness, but I also know that I did what I could do. And there isn't such a word, I guess, when you're working in a disaster as I, it's we. Because I tell you, the team I had was wonderful. And I'll never forget these people. I think I never had enough time to thank them individually because there were so many of them, but I sure do appreciate them.
Our story on the anniversary of the Grand Forks flood was produced by Ned Wharton and recorded by Bill Deputy. You can see an audio slideshow of Grand Forks then and now on our website, npr.org. You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News.